Let's Talk Sales. This is the podcast for anyone who's interested in growing sales. Let's Talk Sales, as always, is brought to you by Calavia, the sales playbook platform made for your team by your team. The Calavia sales playbook houses your company's best practices, templates, and processes, and it also functions as an online sales training academy for your existing team and new hires. You can learn more at calavia.com. That's C-O-L-L-A-V-I-A.com. Throughout the month of March, at Criteria for Success, we've been writing and talking about accountability and workability. These are just such important topics when it comes to selling. You can check out the blog for best practices you can use to drive accountability for yourself and for your team. In this CFS Talk Sales Roundtable, we'll be discussing sales accountability. This is Elizabeth Frederick, Operations Officer and Senior Advisor. And with me today, I have our CEO, Charles Bernard. He just published an ebook called Accountability in Sales, a guide for CEOs, sales VPs, and sales managers on how to guide performance. We are doing quite the long titles lately.
Hello, everybody.
I've got our Director of Marketing, Rebecca Smith.
Hello.
And our Marketing and Sales Coordinator, Arianna Miskell.
Hello.
You can find the notes for today's show at criteriaforsuccess.com/pod33. We're episode 33. So I wanted to talk just in general at first about sales accountability. And I like to always start with a pretty broad question. So what I wanted to talk about at first is what's most important to you when it comes to sales accountability? Charles, why don't we start with you?
Okay, well, my simple answer to that question is to have an accountability system. Now, you might be scratching your head going, what is that? I'd say at its most fundamental, a system either for yourself or for you and others. So if it's for yourself, have a check-in in the morning and a check-in at night so you can check on your accountability for the day, meaning any goals you've set, any intention you had on doing some, or promises that you made. If you are doing it not just for yourself, but with other people, then include in your accountability system having an accountability buddy or buddies that might help you stay accountable.
So mine kind of goes back to before Charles's. So before you need a buddy and before you need to get everything else kind of hashed out, you need to make sure that your goals are realistic and feasible. Whether you're a salesperson and you're setting your own goals or you're managing a team, you just need to make sure that they're within reach and that you can actually be accountable for them. Otherwise, your whole process might just be destroyed.
Absolutely. Such a great point. And that's a topic that I covered in the ebook I released last month as well about setting and achieving sales goals. So important that they're realistic.
Definitely. And I think that where I kind of come from on this maybe piggybacks on both of your guys' points a little bit, and that I think that it's really important that we take personal responsibility for our own goals and our own accountability to our goals. Because if we don't take ownership first, no one else is going to do it for us, right? Mm-hmm. We have to be real and realistic before we can be accountable to anyone else. So with that said, the second part of this is accountability to other people, which is what Charles mentioned and Arianna mentioned about having a buddy. I read an article recently that actually we determined earlier, Charles, that you had used this study when you were writing your ebook on accountability, right?
I think three of us at CFS have used the same study.
Yeah, it is. It's from the American Society of Training and Development, and they did a study on accountability and determined that if you have a 65% chance of completing a goal if you commit to someone else, and if it's a specific accountability appointment that you have, a standing appointment that you keep with that person, that your chances rise to 95%. So if you have goals, if you have things that you need to stay accountable to, having a partner for it, 65%, and then having a standing meeting, 95%, that's pretty good statistics there.
Definitely. You know, it's kind of like if you try to lose weight and you just have this amorphous idea, I want to lose weight, that might be, might be successful, it might not
sure.
be. If you have a written goal, if you have some level of system and process, you're much more likely. If you have a training buddy or a training partner, much more likely. If you have a personal trainer and you're meeting with them every Tuesday at 10 a.m., you're going to be a lot more successful than any of those previous methods. And so I think, I think it's sometimes an overused metaphor, but there's a reason it's so often used is that it's realistic when it comes to accountability. You think of really anything that you want to do in your life, it requires accountability.
With that said, Elizabeth, I hope that my my accountability partner for my food and nutrition is listening because I've slacked off for the past week and he hasn't even noticed.
Oh, see, there's a gap in accountability. When I thought about this question, I kind of went big picture. And to me, it's really important that everyone is accountable for their part of an overall goal. It's easy when you're looking at a team, at an organization, to focus on just one group of people. Maybe you just look at salespeople, or the execs just focus on the sales managers. You know, why aren't they making things work? But accountability is a team effort. People need to see that there's an overall goal. You know, what's the company's number? What's my team's number? Mm-hmm. And then they need to know what's their part in it, both from like, what am I responsible for, but also how am I contributing to the overall goal of the company? And if you don't have that sense of how you contribute, it's really hard to develop a sense of internal personal accountability.
Definitely.
So then I wanted to transition into talking about problems. It's always a favorite topic of mine.
Seems to be your favorite.
Indeed. So what common problems have you seen sales teams and leaders encounter related to sales accountability? Why don't we start with you, Rebecca?
Sure. So I think that accountability is a habit, and habits themselves aren't always easy to form and follow through on. I've watched sales teams and leaders put awesome plans together, but then never follow through. Mm-hmm. Usually they have the best of intentions, but they get stuck when it comes to the planning part of things. And that's why I'm such a diehard. And I think I've talked about this on every single roundtable so far. And that's time blocking and time management. If you don't plan it, it ain't going to happen. Yeah. So.
And on that note, I will bounce off of you, Rebecca, and saying, if you don't have a process, it's not going to happen either. So, you know, just like I said before, you really need to make sure that your goals are within reach. But then off of that, you need to make sure that there's processes in place so that your salespeople know what to do to be accountable to their goals. And it should be company-wide or team-wide, just to be consistent.
I think one area where I've seen problems with accountability is when expectations aren't clear. One of my classic examples is between sales and marketing. So picture lead generation. You get some leads, they come into the CRM system like salesforce.com. And I can tell you a number of times I've come across companies, organizations where sales expects marketing to do some pre-qualification or maybe even fully qualify the lead. And marketing is expecting sales to do the same. And mm-hmm. you kind of get into that, it isn't my job or ain't yeah. my job, right? Finger pointing. And speaking of what is and what isn't my job, I think one way to resolve expectations is in the job description. And when it comes to accountability, I'll just say that there are two things that I think are fundamental in a job description. Number one is, and we practically see this in every single job description, which is, what are you responsible for?
Yeah.
So let's say if it's a salesperson, you know, an example of what you would be responsible for is developing forecasts, generating leads, in this case, let's say that's where it falls in sales, not marketing, and generating proposals. So that's what you're responsible for. I would say I rarely, if at all, see in a job description, not only what are you responsible for, but what are you accountable for? And I think it's really key to spell that out.
Yeah.
Right? So one example of accountability in sales for a salesperson would be to achieve a quarterly quota or achieve a certain goal. Or even if you want something less numbers-oriented and dollars-oriented, it might be you're accountable for maintaining satisfied clients. And then people say, well, how do you measure that? You might do that in some form of a survey where the client is actually asked about their level of satisfaction for the salesperson. I think that's a big accountability point.
Yeah, that's a great point, Charles. And I love the different approach to accountability. When you were talking about leads kind of falling in between sales and marketing and nobody wants to own them, that reminded me of I played volleyball very terribly in high school. And if anybody's played volleyball or seen volleyball played by bad players, the ball comes and it's in between two people and nobody runs for it because each person thinks the other person is going to run for it, and then it hits the ground and you lose the point. So really important to make sure that somebody knows who's supposed to be diving for that ball.
That's a great visual. Thank
yeah.
you.
Yeah. You should just picture. It was really, really bad. I think I won one game in my high school career, and that was because the other team forfeited. So I'm going to take moderator's privilege, and I'm going to cheat and say two common problems. So first of all, and this is a problem I've seen quite a lot actually lately, is that sometimes people don't know what they're accountable for. That kind of speaks a little bit to what Charles was just talking about putting accountabilities in the job description. I see this often happen when people are selling as a team, and nobody's clear on who's actually responsible for what parts of the sales process. So who should be bringing in the leads? Who is ultimately responsible for closing them? If you're selling as a team, it can be kind of fuzzy. I also see this really happening on teams that don't have clear sales goals. So that might be on, for example, a professional services team where you have client responsibilities that are clear, but you don't necessarily have sales responsibilities that are clear. Everybody knows that sales is part of the job, but nobody's exactly sure what am I supposed to specifically be doing. So that lack of clarity, I think, is a really common problem. And the second thing that I just couldn't help but bring up is that I often see that people have accountability, but they don't have authority. And that's a really unfair and untenable position to put somebody in when they are going to be responsible for an outcome, but they don't have the ability to drive the process toward that outcome. So we often see, for example, a product manager, and they have a number, a sales goal. But if they don't have the ability to drive the sales team to generate opportunities for that product or to bring them into accounts to sell that product, they don't have the ability to really drive that number. And that's not a great position to put them in, and you're not likely to see success. So you really need to make sure that somebody has authority in areas that they have accountability.
Great points, Elizabeth.
Yeah, couldn't help myself there. Always easy for me to see problems. I'd love to hear you guys also share a story of where you've seen a sales leader effectively establish a culture of sales accountability. And I'll start because I think I've told this story on multiple episodes. I'll be like Rebecca with her time blocking. But it's just such a huge impact. I can't really help but share it. We had a client and they were in financial services. So kind of with that professional services space I was just talking about. And their sales culture was incredibly reactive. They just thought, you know, we will deliver great service and wait for the referrals to come in. And it got them to a certain point. They were doing okay, but not great. And the leader really wanted to establish a sense of shared accountability, that there was a goal that around growing the business. And so he created a simple level of basic activity. And he said, everybody needs to have at least 3 outbound business development activities a week. And that's a low goal. Obviously, they were in a team where that was appropriate for them. But it's very easy to measure against that. Did you have 3 or didn't you? But it also gave people flexibility. You know, some people might have speaking engagements. Other people might have meetings with referral sources. Other people might have lunches. And it gave people a sense of flexibility, but within that simple accountability of were there 3 or not? And so that to me was just a really great example of establishing a culture of accountability. Charles, what about you?
Well, I remember that client too. I'm thinking of another client, and they're closer to home. They're in our backyard in New York City, and they're in the logistics business, but I don't think that's really relevant, but I just wanted to mention that. And the CEO and the VP of sales, Mark and Michael, both were committed to one aspect of our program, which is what we call the accountability aspect, the accountability module. Elizabeth knows exactly what I'm talking about because it's baked into our playbook process. And what we found interesting, and the reason I'm telling this story is we learned from them actually, is that although they, being the sales leaders or the leaders of the organization, had a big commitment to the accountability process. What does that mean specifically? It means setting goals, sticking to the goals, staying with the program, adopting the program, all of that. And they came up, I guess we did it together. I think it was a sort of mutual discovery with this term, which I've also used before. It sounds like we're kind of groundhogging here, but groundhog daying. the thing we've said before is the J curve. And the J curve is where things get worse before they get better. Mm-hmm. And if you think of like a hockey stick or the bottom of that curve before things get better, we created this term called the quitting zone. And we were finding people were not accountable, resisting being accountable, until at some point they got through the eye of the needle. They knew this program wasn't going away, because a lot of the time we go into an organization, we put in a big game-changing type program like this, and a lot of people kind of wait us out. Oh, the consultants will leave. Yeah. The CEO will get tired. The VP of sales will kind of like, you know, end up flavor of the month. You know, they'll think this is just one new thing, and then they'll get sick of it and it'll just fade away. In this case, it didn't. So I'm talking about the J curve because things didn't fade away. And we got to a point where they kind of sunk to the lowest point possible, where people were realizing that this program wasn't going away. And the only way that they were going to be able to...
It sound awful. I know.
Well, the only way they were going to succeed was really to follow through on all the things they were resisting. And now, I mean, I'm talking close to 5 years later, they are maintaining their commitments, their agreements. How do we know this? Because we see a lot of the updates that come to us, because we're admins also on the playbook. And I'm really happy to see that this is one of those classic stories. I know it's a long one, but it's one of those classic stories where we have a client who really went through the eye of the needle to stick to the accountability.
I just wanted to throw in on this one. We have a great article about the J curve that I know Elizabeth will throw in the show notes.
Absolutely.
So I'm going to give another story. And this one, I don't really know how to relate to what Charles just said. But this is something that we do here at CFS. And I know I've talked about it before, but it's snossaging. And it's our process that we use to get referrals and kind of just, you know, network a little bit. How long would you guys say that we have been snossaging? How
many years? Almost. This summer it'll be 2 years.
Easy. So, yeah. So I think honestly longer, because you guys were doing it before I got here.
So 3 years.
So
3 years.
We're going.
I think you're right. As long as you've been here, Rebecca, and we started that process a couple months together.
So we're going on 3 years of having two meetings a week. It used to be Rebecca and Charles. Now it's me and Charles, and we both have to hold each other accountable for our pieces of the pie. And if someone doesn't do their job, then everything goes to you know what, and nothing gets done. And then it's like a big mess. But basically, you know, this is a great example of accountability, because it'll be the day before a meeting and I'll say, hey, Charles, did you get that person for me? Did you get that this person get back to you? And he's like, oh, I forgot. I got to do it. Usually.
Exactly.
So, but it's really great. And he does say, you know, that a lot, this wouldn't happen. It's kind of an extraneous thing, reaching out to people within your own network to try to get referrals. It's something that you need someone to help you be accountable for. So that's why having a partner in times like these, it's pretty great.
But it does relate, Ariana, to the J curve a little bit, because I think left to my own devices, I wouldn't go through that point where it would just be easy to blow it off. But because you're there to hold me accountable, I know that we meet, and I'd say better than 50% of the time when we meet, I'm getting a huge benefit. And what do I mean by that? People that you've asked me to connect with and actually sat there in some cases and watch me tap out an email or leave a voicemail have come back to me with opportunities. So I think the J curve does relate a little bit.
And I just want to add, not only are we holding each other accountable in this process, but we are also holding the people that we choose to network with accountable, because if you don't answer us, we're going to keep emailing you.
Good point.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's definitely proving Rebecca's study that she mentioned true, of having a goal and having regular meetings.
That's true. And I can also speak to the J curve of when we first started doing this, Charles, because remember when we first started, we had to figure out the right language to use for people. That was the big thing. So, and the right platform too. Even though we're finding people on LinkedIn and their pictures are reminding us to reach out to those people, we found that people were less likely to respond to a message through LinkedIn than they were through email. So we had to really do a lot of A/B testing in the beginning to figure out what is the best way to reach out.
and a little bit of humor helps. I know I'm looking at Rebecca and I can see her wheels turning. Do you remember the kind of email we used to send?
Oh, the are you in prison email? Oh, yeah. So that was definitely a fun time. I'm sure some of you that are listening have gotten emails before where people have kind of given you some crazy options. They've said, hey, I haven't heard back from you about this. Are you A, on the beach, B, blah, 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 or C, are you in prison, whatever, whatever the case may be. But it made for some really fun templates,
definitely,
you could just say. And so, yeah, I'd like to share a story. I mean, of course, it's going to be about time blocking because that's all I know how to talk about. But no, I want to refer actually to the boss that I formerly had that I think kind of taught me. He taught me about time blocking, but he taught me a lot of stuff about how to sell. And he was very effective because he was an A, you know, A top performer. He was a top performer before. He had gotten his feet wet. He walked the walk and talked the talk, you know what I mean? And so there was a level of respect that I had for him because I knew that he had done this job and had to deal with all the objections and pushbacks and all the BS. So I really trusted him with the activities that he gave me. And he was really strict with KPIs. And he's like, these are your KPIs. We're going to meet on Fridays. And Friday, you need to have this report to me. And it used to take me hours. Oh my God. It got to a point where we had a midnight extension to submit our reports. This
oh
was
goodness.
This is way before, I mean, apps and stuff like that where you can do it easily, before we had a really good CRM. So it was kind of a nightmare, but I did it because it drove my goals. And I think that, like I said, it goes back to having respect for the process and knowing that he's done this before. If he hits these KPIs and uses his time block to manage everything, then it'll work out.
Hey, Elizabeth, you remember we have a very similar example now that I'm thinking about it. We had a client, we did a webinar on goal setting and time management. And if you remember, I pulled up my playbook and showed them my goals. And it was like what I thought, a quick example.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember what they said? It seemed to resonate really well for them.
Yeah, it showed that you were doing what you told them to do. And they also got a lot of great ideas from seeing your examples.
Yeah.
It definitely helps. So if you're a sales manager or a VP, I mean, work with your team and let them know you've been there. You've gotten your feet wet before. I mean, so many times it's easy for us to be like, oh, you don't even do anything anymore. You're just sitting here and forecast all day.
That's hard work too. Yeah, I think also what you mentioned about sometimes you have to do the process in a hard and clunky way. And then over time, it gets easier. It kind of matches
definitely
up with the J curve, as Charles was talking about. But with any process, if you did it from the beginning, when it was very manual and very hard, you get almost a better sense of what's really involved.
Mm-hmm.
And then as it gets easier over time, because new systems, new apps come out, you still sometimes have a better understanding than somebody who maybe came in when it was easier. So it's interesting
that
you kind of did all the really like boring kind of sludging through the process.
Yeah, people complain about CRM. You don't know what it was like before. I mean, everybody I'm sure knows what it was like because people are scribbling on pieces of paper. I felt like I was studying for a college exam, you know? You had to rewrite everything and it's a lot of work, but
showing your age.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm older.
Happy birthday, by the way.
Oh, thank you.
Oh, yeah. Happy birthday.
Most of our listeners are obviously sales leaders, sales managers, and VPs. And I'd love if we could share some best practices that sales leaders can use to increase sales accountability. So, Arianna, why don't we start with you?
Okay. So I kind of touched on this before, but it's really important to make sure that you have processes in place that are set in stone so that your team is completely sure that they're contributing to a culture of accountability. An example would be, in our case, the Snossage process. Me and Charles meet twice a week. We know if we meet twice a week and we do what we have to do, that we were accountable to this process, it happened, and we can move on and get our other work done. So it's really important. It's easy to say, you know, be accountable to this, be accountable to that, set your goals and complete them. But at the end of the day, It's a lot harder to do that when there's no guidance involved. So
definitely. I think that kind of leads to mine. And I'm kind of reiterating a lot of what I've been talking about today. To me, it's just so incredibly important that goals are clear and people know their part. So people need to understand, again, that big goal and how they specifically contribute to it. I think we so often think people just need to see a small piece of the picture, only the part that's relevant to them. But that's really not the case. And to have that sense of internal accountability where people feel personally responsible to things, they need to have a big picture of what's happening and how they're helping contribute.
Definitely. And I'd say that as a leader, it starts with you. You've got to lead by example. If the person that's leading isn't accountable to their own goals and priorities or doesn't do what they say they're going to do, it can really create a negative culture. Mm-hmm. And I also want to recommend behavioral assessments because I think that it gives you the ability to learn what motivates and demotivates people on your sales team.
Mm. Definitely.
And it's very objective.
Definitely. Like not everybody's the same. Some people need a little more handholding. Some people are more independent. And as I've learned, some people are very resistant to change. And it can be really crippling to some people. And it can be a little bit harder and you need to kind of walk them through that process a little bit more. I actually recently worked with someone, and I won't name names, but they refused to plan or write things down. And it was just a construct that was built into this person's personality. So I had to really get that through my own head and then figure out a way to help within their own sort of kind of personal construct.
That sounds challenging.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. And it is. And that's one of those types of things. But actually, speaking of this whole idea of motivation, Elizabeth, you wrote an ebook on this too.
I did indeed. The Four Dimensions of Sales Motivation.
So yeah. It's a really great one.
That should be in the show notes too.
Yeah.
Great. Nice. So instead of talking about what you can do, I'm going to talk about if you're a sales leader and you want to increase sales accountability, here's what you shouldn't do. I think you shouldn't accept people blaming others as a valid excuse. I've heard time and time again, and when I used to manage sales and I had a bunch of salespeople reporting to me, that I'd get the, well, marketing didn't do what I asked them to do, or I didn't get the report on time, or this other person in operations held me up. And it's not like there's going to be times when you're relying on someone. It's that sort of automatic knee-jerk excuse that, well, they didn't do their part, so I didn't do my part. Mm-hmm. And the worst of all of that, almost in every example, is I get to hear that excuse when it's too late. I mean, if someone comes to me and says, I've asked 3 times to get this report, can you help me? I call that escalating. That's not what I'm talking about. That to me is a responsible way of asking your manager or your leader to help you if you're expecting someone else to do something you can't move forward. But it's that sort of automatic blame game that I think can creep into a team, and you really as a leader have to stamp that out.
Yeah, that's a great point. I think just the timing there is really key because if you bring it to somebody's attention before it goes wrong, you know, early on, they're able to actually help and make a change and maybe make something happen as opposed to you wait until it's due, it's overdue, it's, you know, it should be done. And then it's like, oh yeah, we didn't do step 2, so we never got to step 10. It's like, well, duh. That's a really great point, Charles. So last question, what one piece of actionable advice would you like to share that our listeners can apply today to improve sales accountability? We'll start with you, Charles.
Okay, so I would say this is a broken record statement because I've said it many times, but develop a peer-level coaching program where people help each other. And I'm really, really passionate about it being peer-level, meaning there's no hierarchy. I got picked as a coach because, number 1, I raised my hand, and number 2, it's my turn, and it can rotate. So 1 quarter, I'm the coach, someone else the next quarter is the coach. But I think when you get into peer-level coaching, everyone's walking in everybody else's shoes because they're all kind of at the same level.
That's great. Cool. Thanks, Charles.
So I actually have 3 pieces of actionable advice.
I'll allow it.
I'll keep them each short. But the first is that I think at a minimum, having your sales team get together annually for sales training. Of course, I'm going to promote that as a sales training company. But, you know, just getting the team together to share success stories and the war stories too can be really helpful to the team. And if you can, biannually or quarterly is even better. You know, definitely. I'm not talking about an update or a weekly meeting type of thing. I'm talking about a day or two of training where you're really hyper-focused on your pitch, your processes, and all that stuff, and the common problems that you solve. And then the second thing is, of course, what we've been talking about this whole time is encouraging your team to work with accountability partners. This could be two people or a triad of three, whatever works. It's just important that they're working together, like Charles said, on a peer level to make sure that things are moving. For us here, an example is that we do one-to-one meetings once a week. The other days we have different types of meetings, but the one-to-one is a really good opportunity for your team and for people to get together and check in. And then the third, I would not be doing my job here if I didn't repeat for the thousandth time, time blocking. So first make that prospecting action plan that you're going to use and then follow it up with your time block. And if you use the idea above with people working in pairs or triads to check in with these plans, that's how you'll get to the next level.
Nice.
See, it all came together in the end.
You just couldn't help yourself.
Well, my piece of advice is pretty simple. And I think I say this every week, or not every week, but every time we do this. But put your processes into your playbook. And if you don't have a playbook, you should get a playbook, or you need to find a place to put this where your team will see it, maybe in, I don't know, weekly meetings, or if you have Slack. I know some companies use Slack, but just get this information out there and make sure that everyone has access to it.
Definitely. That's always a great point, Arianna. I will kind of say something that's pretty similar to one of Rebecca's three and to all of yours, and that's to make sure you have regular one-on-one meetings. I think Rebecca brought that up as well. These could be between managers and salespeople, between execs and managers, or between peer-level coaches and the people that they're coaching, like Charles was saying. And one-on-one meetings really drive accountability. First of all, that's an appropriate place if you are above somebody in the organizational structure to hold them accountable. It can be sometimes inappropriate or uncomfortable to hold them accountable in a group setting. You know, calling people out in a team sales meeting can be very demoralizing. It makes you seem like a bully. It's not generally a best practice. Sometimes it is necessary, but generally, if you want to hold somebody accountable and they're not necessarily meeting expectations, you want to do that one-on-one. But that also gives somebody the space to step up and to hold themselves accountable. What you want to have happen is that people both make sure that one-on-one meetings happen. So if you are being managed by somebody and you know that you won't be able to make your one-on-one meeting, you proactively reach out and say, let's reschedule the meeting. You come to the meeting with your goals. You say, please hold me accountable to this. And those one-on-one meetings create the relationship that gives that space. We really like to see weekly one-on-one meetings because when you're looking at your calendar, when you're looking at just kind of what's happening, weekly is a good pace to kind of keep you focused, keep you accountable. But if you can't do that, every other week can be okay. And when it comes to managers meeting with execs, you know, if necessary, monthly can be sufficient. But if you can, really get that interval shorter. But I think we've brought up a lot of the same topics over and over again today. You know, time blocking, meetings, coaching. There's a lot that helps drive sales accountability. So thank you so much to Charles, Rebecca, and Arianna for all of your contributions to today's show. And thank you so much to all of our loyal listeners to Let's Talk Sales. You can find the notes for today's show at criteriaforsuccess.com/pod33. In next week's show, we'll be talking to Jerome DeRoy of Narrative Inc. about storytelling. And you can stay tuned for this Friday's inspiration, where you'll be hearing a great quote from Charles, again about accountability. Beginning next month, we'll be writing about personal and professional development on the CFS blog. You can check it out at criteriaforsuccess.com/blog. Arianna will also be releasing a new ebook, and we're really excited to share it with you.
Ooh.
It's almost done. Next month, because we've got 5 Mondays, we'll also have a special Q&A episode of the podcast. So we'd love to hear your questions. Please share any questions or challenges you have related to personal development. You can share them with us using the hashtag AskCFS, or you can email them to podcast@criteriaforsuccess.com. If you'd like, you could even record yourself in a voice memo and email that to us, and that would be a way to hear yourself on the podcast. So again, any questions that you have related to personal and professional development, we'd love to get your questions as we prepare that show. If you're enjoying the show, please recommend us to a friend and subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts or wherever it is that you find your podcasts. While you're there, please leave us a rating or a review. This will help more people find the show, and it lets us know what's working and where to improve. Let's Talk Sales is a production of Criteria for Success and is produced by Rebecca Smith, Ariana Miskell, and me, Elizabeth Frederick. Happy selling!